Welcome, everybody. Good afternoon. Thank you for dialing in, and thank you for spending time with us to listen to an update and ask questions regarding our partnership deal with Manchester United that we have announced today. I think before we get into Q&A, I think it makes sense, obviously, to give some perspective around this, what happened and why we did it, and how we think about the business. I think after that, we would, of course, open up for Q&A. I think we have a decent amount of time for your question. I think there's quite some participants, so happy to take your questions. Maybe from a general view on the business, how we see it. Business is performing very well, in line with what we had guided towards. We're very pleased with what we see in the business. Obviously, we could not talk about Q1 results yet, and will not be able to do so for some time. That's, from a timing perspective, probably not perfect. These partnership deals, they are negotiated under relative short time frames with high competition. There is a requirement to pull through on these things, and get them done when they can get done, especially for a number one media sports asset like Manchester United. You can imagine that there's significant competition. Everything has to happen relatively quickly and when it can happen, and therefore the timing of the communication, the signing and the communication is probably not perfect. Can clearly acknowledge that. We had to then also come up with the ad hoc message once it was signed in the middle of the day, also not perfect. Again, these deals in this environment are contentious, and therefore we did what we could to secure this deal, which we believe is a very, very attractive deal for us over a five-year period. Generally speaking, how do we look at the business? I think you know the business has been operating and is operating at margins around 56%-57%, and we've given ourselves a target of 1 billion billings by 2023, so a 30% year-over-year growth for the next years. This is the plan we're working towards. It's based on the fact that we do have very good customer reach across all segments, in the single user segment, the SMB segment, and also increasing traction in the enterprise segment. As you know, we do have a very nice solution portfolio now. We have our core products, we have collaboration access products, we have the augmented reality operations technology. We just completed the Upskill acquisition, which is a double down on AR, which was very well received. Strong player, good brand in the U.S. market, first acquisition in the U.S. We are sitting here now with a very strong solution portfolio. We have a global footprint with offices everywhere. We strongly believe that it's a good time to come back to the discussion that we had with many of you, which is there an opportunity to grow stronger for longer by investing more into marketing and sales, and not running at 56%-60% margin? We were thinking about this for quite a while. We felt that the guidance that we've given for the 1 billion in 2023 is very realistic, and the, so to say, near-term goal that we're working towards. We also felt that we have significant addressable markets ahead of us, that we have a good portfolio, and that there is an opportunity to secure even longer-term growth rates beyond 25%-30% after 2023 if we do the right thing and invest into R&D, of course, which we do, but also invest into our sales motion, partnership motion, so distribution and reselling partnerships, and not the least, the brand, because the brand has been built over the years with a free user ecosystem. It is still positioned a lot in the free user and remote access world. We are working very actively to position it for more cross-selling, more use cases, and enterprise and OT. We clearly saw that from the brand studies we did, that there is significant upside potential in various fields. One is better awareness in the APAC growth countries, doubling down in the Americas with the brand, positioning the brand more for OT enterprise use cases, creating some even higher loyalty and pricing power with a stronger brand umbrella. We felt this is something where there's room to invest, clearly upside potential, and we looked at other companies, tech companies are doing, how much they invest into brand over a longer period of time, consistent funding allocation, and how much they are able to grow from there. And we felt that's also a model for us. Now that we have the right to do so with all the solutions we have and the technology advantage, and also on the back of the mega trends that we're seeing. So that was the decision process to go out and see whether there is an opportunity to strengthen our brand very significantly. And then there is the opportunity angle to it. Due to COVID and due to the difficult situation in sports over the last year, there are a few opportunities that opened up, which are normally not available. One of the very, very prominent ones being Manchester United as the number one sports club with a big global franchise across the globe, lots of followership, a significant, very high amount of jerseys sold with the logo on it. I think it's the biggest, one of the biggest, if not the biggest SKU for somebody like Adidas. So they're investing significantly into this because it's a big business driver for them. We were approached by them, and they presented us a very interesting vision, which is on the one hand, of course, the classical media assets with significant reach on the jersey, on the digital boards in the stadium, social media, online, using the players as testimonials. So it's a very long list of media assets that we will have access to, which if you isolate each and any of them, already is a significant amount. And putting that all together in a big media rights basket that we can use felt very attractive. So really hitting many, many of the channels that we want to hit really in one go. The second element is that the marketing organization of Manchester United, 200 people, 100 alone in digital marketing, is a fantastic multiplier to take what we have and drive it into the different channels and use their capabilities and their expertise to propel us in this field. And thirdly, they came with a very concrete list of project ideas, how we as TeamViewer would digitalize them. So the processes around bringing people back to the stadium after COVID, processes of how they work in the office, processes around coaching, data gathering and analytics in the players' operations and the matches' operations. So very long list of projects that we will embark on together. And we both felt that this partnership of the biggest media platform that we can use for our brand, but also our innovation and capabilities that they could use to modernize their business and digitalize their processes, is a win-win situation. So they were presenting us this opportunity, clearly high competition around this, probably somebody like TeamViewer, a smaller company, good growth, high profitability, maybe not the number one on the list, but we had a chance to transact if we were fast and decisive in this, and that's what we did. We then communicated what we do here with the guidance. And I think one thing is important when you look at the communication, we have clearly said that this the margin reduction down to 50% steady state is due to this deal and also other partnerships that we are planning to entertain. And we got quite some questions already around the SMB, SOHO, consumerish nature, maybe more of this partnership, which is certainly true, but it reaches all the way into decision makers, of course. We will also do things which focus more on the upper end, the enterprise end, and the OT end. Unfortunately, this is not done yet, so we can't talk about it and cannot communicate it. But it should be clear that we will not put all our marketing spend into one basket. We will diversify and also focus a lot on enterprise, IoT, operational technology, and on those use cases even more directly. Some time to go, but it's already baked into the new guidance so that we have the room to do so. So from here on, expect more news about interesting partnerships going forward, but don't expect any additional change to the guidance. So we've catered for what we think makes sense over a longer term period. And we believe the upsides that we will see will come from additional growth beyond 2023 or maybe in 2023, higher loyalty of customers, better position of cross-sell. So there will be many good positive effects in the business from these investments. So that's how we see it in the whole picture end to end. I think one of the points that were raised by investors clearly is, could you have educated us more to get there so that we are not that surprised on a Friday? Absolutely, we take that. We would have loved to do so. But this is a very transactional piece that we concluded now. We have a good roadmap ahead of what else we will do. And we'll, of course, try to communicate better on those ones. Also, inviting you to a roundtable where we can walk you through the positive impact on our midterm, long-term plan and how we see this played out. We haven't been able to conclude that today for this message, but that's certainly to come, and we will invite you to get more information on this one. So maybe I stop here. Stefan, if you want to add anything, maybe best you do it now, and then we go to Q&A.
Yeah, I think just to add on what you said, I think many people or investors asked about how does Man United fit into your strong emphasis towards the enterprise space. I think we need to bear in mind, I think that's one of the strengths of our business model is that we have a very strong heritage in the SMB business with ticket sizes usually in the 1,000 to maybe 5,000 euro area, and then obviously a strong growth in the enterprise segment. But I think the Man United platform actually will clearly help us addressing this SMB space very successfully because it's still 80% of our business. It's also fast growing and it has very high attractive returns for us. So I think that sometimes tends to be forgotten that we also have a very successful SMB business. And I think that platform is very attractive for us from that perspective.
And of course, with a focus on such a powerful brand globally with like that followership on and penetration in the key market, this is also providing for significant, call it downside protection against competition on the low end, because that creates a loyalty to the brand and the positioning and the presence of the brand, which is completely dominating compared to any other player that would be in the low end of the market. Yeah, so maybe with this then, operator, I think it makes sense to open it up for questions because I'm sure there will be many.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. And one moment for the first question, please. The first question comes from the line of George Webb with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Oliver and Stefan. I have a few questions, please. So firstly, just going back to your comments around the top line kind of benefits from the partnership deal, it sounds as if it's more about growing strongly beyond 2023 rather than beforehand, which is why the midterm billings target is unchanged. But on the flip side, this is clearly a very significant deal, doubling your marketing spend. So naturally, you'd think there should be some top line benefits coming from that. Is your decision so far not to change your billings target out of conservatism or some other factor? That's the first question. The second question is, can you just talk a little bit more about your different sales and marketing avenues? Clearly, partnerships are one avenue you can use, but so are hiring more sales people on the enterprise side or more traditional and potentially more targeted paid marketing. So how do you trade off between those different options? And then just thirdly, on the total cost of the deal, if I take the midpoints of the new versus old EBITDA guidance, the implied cost, and I appreciate there might be some other partnerships included within this, but the implied cost was about 35 million euros. I presume that's not on a run rate basis, but potentially only reflects part of the footballing season falling into your FY21. Would that interpretation be correct? And therefore, should we expect related cost of this partnership to increase in 2022? Those are my questions. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Then maybe I go ahead and start with the total cost of the deal. Your math is correct, clearly, in terms of the financial impact for the second half. However, the other potential partnership, which Oliver explained, is fully baked into that financial guidance as well. Yeah, and that is a significant piece. Clearly, going forward, there will be a full ramp up from the 35 million to roughly 60-70 million. Yeah, but again, including two partnerships. Yeah. And as we grow the business, obviously, that also means that we have a significant headroom to invest right into additional marketing spend. But ultimately, the total deal size for both of those deals is as you described it.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
And maybe in the short-term billings, yeah, to your point, clearly, I mean, typically those deals, they take a while to materialize in additional billings. Do we expect additional billings already a bit earlier? Absolutely. Can we quantify as of today? I think that's tough. Also, the season with Man United starts in the summer time frame, 2021, right? So it will take a while for those to bear fruit, frankly. But clearly, we should expect some increased billings maybe in the second half of 2022, and then maybe more so in 2023. Can we quantify that yet and put it into the financial envelope? I think that's where we just failed a bit. That's a bit too early, frankly.
Yeah, and I think also we want to get the full picture of other things we might do, because when they come together, then this gives us better visibility. We really wanted to do that in one go once we have everything in place that we want there. Again, from a cost perspective, it is in place now. It's catered for, but we really want to execute on this first. On the paid, the marketing, the sales, how do we think about it? I think that's a very good question, because that's something where I think we always very cautious of and conscious of and how we work. I think we have a very efficient go-to-market model in the sense that we had a brand and we enjoy a brand that has been built from the free user ecosystem. So that's, of course, very efficient, and we can convert some of them into paying customers. That's also efficient. And we have been putting salespeople to work where there was opportunity. So we opened the offices in APAC, we hired enterprise salespeople, channel salespeople. So there has always been, over the last 3 years since we're running the business, a significant invest in salespeople, and that's going to continue. What we've also planned or have planned already in the current envelope, so before this communication, is a step up in marketing spend in the traditional way of doing it for us. And the traditional way for us is digital performance marketing. So it's a very kind of closely linked relationship between spend more and get more billings, almost like same day or next day, because it's lead generation and conversion either on the website or then in inside sales or with the mid-market enterprise people. So that is our has been our marketing model. We've stepped up the budget for that for this year. We will work more with content producers and exclusive placements, like, for example, Financial Times and others like this, where we really will penetrate the success stories of what we do. So we put budget to work where content is being created around the use cases with reference cases. We will be on conferences where there's content hubs that we create for the main European business newspaper, so to say, for their digital assets, of course. And that this will then be distributed across Europe, so that we are more present, more opinion leaders on the new way of working. So that's happening, and that has been part of the budget. And we're ramping up the digital spend to sell more products, to defend against the low end, and to capture new opportunities in APEC. So this is has been the current way of doing it. So now we believe there is this opportunity to invest significantly more in the brand. And then effectively, I think there's two ways to do it. One is a market by market, so country by country, segment by segment spending approach, which in our case is multiple products, multiple markets, countries, and then driving different go-to-market and different processes. And that is a relatively big matrix or cube of decisions and spendings that you need to do, monitor, and then also track and see how it works. And I think what can be learned in certain phases of companies from other companies is there's the other strategy, which is go for a platform that has all this, a platform like Manchester United or other big sports franchises. They do have reach in every country. They dominate social media channels. They have TV presence. They have print advertising or print visibility, not advertising. So you are, from one day to the other, you are in all these channels in a very, very significant way, much more than you could ever achieve on your own. You also don't have to produce the content to talk about, because the content is produced from the sport itself. And you have the organization that has on the other side, which has the best interest to push the content everywhere. So we don't need to worry about Manchester United driving the great messages of what they do and how they work into the world across all their channels. They will do that because that's their core business, and we will always come with it. So if you really do then the calculation of the spend that is needed and the way to do it, and ask yourself, okay, what is the likelihood of success by betting a bigger amount, and it's a bigger amount on one clear winner that has done it and proven it in the past, versus rebuilding a big branding marketing machine, then I think the learning is that domination helps. If you pick one thing that works for you, dominate and go. And I think that's also something which we see in US players more and more, and not so much in European players. And we believe now is the right time to do that, and that's why we've chosen that approach.
So that's very helpful. If I can have one clarification, just on the margin side of things, when you refer to midterm and the 50% kind of expectation, is that aligned with your 2023 billings target, or is it slightly longer than that?
Well, it's aligned with the 2023 billings target, exactly. And I think then we need to see to which extent that partnership bears fruits, how billings dynamics evolve, and then we can talk about potential margin upside, but I think that's just a bit too early. So the margin guidance we gave is clearly for the period up until 2023.
Great. Thanks very much.
Your next question comes from line of Stacey Pollard with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. A few for me as well. Do you think this is really targeting SMEs, or is it more about getting the free users to target for the upsell later? Just when I think about exactly where the push is there. Secondly, I just want a clarification. Were you saying that Man United is actually becoming a large customer of TeamViewer 2? Maybe just explain that again. I just want to make sure I got that right. And the third one is, was this a board-level decision? So basically, did the board need to approve it given the size of the partnership, or was this considered within the scope of not needing that?
Yeah. So first of all, is it SME and consumer from the focus, and is there an enterprise part to it? It's all of that. But the way we think about it, if we look at our strategy, what we do, we have products for every segment. Sorry, we have the free version for occasional users, and then we have the lower end of the of our product range for SOHOs, SMEs, professional users. Then we have the full SMB stack, enterprise stack, and so forth. Where we will probably launch something which will get significant traction, or should get significant traction. We want to use the augmented reality capabilities that we have for a much broader audience base. So that's not necessarily consumer, but say SOHO prosumer type thing. So we will have an additional product there at some point in time. And of course, if you take the branding platform of Manchester United, everything from large enterprise projects, credibility of customers seeing us being on that branding level, all the way down to free users, it caters for that. There is young football stars that can communicate with young users on the free version or on a meeting product or collaboration product, but there is also management menu talking about their business and their digitalization use cases to the wider world of sports and businesses beyond. So I think the menu of options that you have with a partnership like this is just enormous, and we will use it in all different ways and forms. And to your second question, will Manu become a customer? Manu is a customer, but we will put significant R&D efforts into it to build solutions and use cases in the world of sports with them, which they will consume as part of that deal. So it's covered in the deal, but we will then be able, of course, to take that IP and carry it into other pieces. Some of the solutions they will use are just what we have today because they want to modernize and digitalize their processes, but we will also build new things together. And that will be interesting because we will have the marketing platform to drive them and communicate about it at the very same time. So that's very interesting for us. And last question, supervisory board. Yes, of course, it was a supervisory board decision, a decision that got unanimous support from the board for the long-term outlook of the company. You know that we have private equity still represented in the board. Also, they were very supportive of this move. because we all are convinced that the time to do this invest and really leverage the fact after the acquisition that we have a broad portfolio now and can play across all verticals and across all segments globally. So was very much supported also to that amount, and with the consequence that we trade margins in the shorter term for midterm, long-term growth upside. And of course, not the least, Stefan and myself, also investors in this business and significant investors, and we share that long-term conviction that it makes a lot of sense to deploy money here.
Yeah, and just one quick follow-up, just to make sure that I understand, you are talking about 50% margins next year as well, right? And sort of through 2023, more or less.
Correct. That's correct.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much.
As a reminder, please press star followed by one to ask a question. The next question on the line is Ben Castillo-Bernaus with Exane. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Yeah, thanks for taking the question. The question I have really is around like the opportunity cost of this scale of spend. You know, you've done well with building out the enterprise team over the last 2 years. You've been acquiring some bolt-on M&A. It's all been quite consistent with the strategy you've been talking through. This deal with Man United, with a consumer-focused entity, seems like quite a change of direction from that strategy. So I'm just curious, you know, why do you feel the need to act in this way right now, and how do you justify the incremental ROI, you know, over the short term, I suppose, over the next 1-2 years?
So we cover all segments, right? Our business, I think if you look at where we're strong, we grow strongly in enterprise and mid-market, but we do have a large SMB base. We have small customers, so our growth, and it's also significant subscriber growth every quarter. So it's the full segment coverage, and that was one of the big growth, or one of the big paradigms when we came in, Stefan and I, 3 years ago, was to say we need to cover all the segments. We were, when we came, mostly active in the smaller customer segment, and we were step by step progressing into the enterprise world, and that worked extremely well. But what we want to do is we want to fuel all segments. We want to market towards all segments, and as I said before, this is not the only thing we will do within the envelope that we have given us now. We will also do significant enterprise, but that gives us full segment coverage. And in that sense, from my perspective, there's no opportunity cost on marketing. I think for what we can do in marketing and building the brand, I think the things that we have on the plate, and this is one of them, is exactly what we should do. We're not cutting down on on hiring salespeople or hiring R&D people. I mean, this has been in our envelope. So it's really a marketing on top, which I don't see. I think it's the wrong way to look at this opportunity cost, because we have not that great opportunity to hire even more salespeople now in the short term and believe they all will have lots of leads coming in. I mean, it's always a mix of push and pull. We have invested a lot into people and push, so to say. Now we take the pull piece and add it to that, and I think that is then a good mix across the whole funnel, from branding to demand generation to then actually sales. So I think it improves our business mix for the long run.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand we did not cut back on any other investment areas. Otherwise, obviously, the margin impact would have been less potentially, but we clearly continue to expand into sales, adding more sales resources across the globe, especially in enterprise and mid-market team, and also continue to add a significant amount of engineers, yeah, for this year and next year. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's an important point. I mean, this is a mix in our business system. It would have been straightforward, as Stefan said, to swallow it more easily, smaller tickets, smaller change, by just cutting back on other things and just try to hide it in other things in the business, which then kind of bite us later. That's not the point. We want to run and drive the business on the initiatives that we have, but we want to accelerate by putting even more on top of it. I think in the terms of long-term ROI or short-term ROI, 1-2 years, these things are big. have to activate all these channels. We have to throw the messaging in. There's a lot of work. I mean, the menu partnership only starts in summer. Then there's the jerseys. They will replace older jerseys in all the retail channels. There will be a massive amount of jerseys sold with our logo on it. Then there will be television broadcasting with our messaging. So it builds up over time. This doesn't happen within the short term. Everybody who knows who does branding knows that this requires consistent, repeated spending to build brand equity. But once you have it, and nobody can take it away quickly. So it's a build up. And therefore, we consider it will take time. And we'll see how much time. Maybe it's faster, and maybe we are too conservative in putting that out now and should just draw the number, which is already next year it should increase X. But I think you know us, that we typically are more cautious on these things.
Move on to the next question from Mohammed Moala with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Great, thank you. Hi, Oliver. Hi, Stefan. A couple from my end as well. First of all, I know that with some of these marketing sponsorships, it's a little harder to tangibly quantify the sort of returns versus, say, adding sort of sales capacity and allowing for a period of productivity improvement, but you can sort of get to some sort of math on that. I mean, can you perhaps help us understand how you thought about that from a kind of quantification standpoint? And then can I just confirm that you said that in terms of sales, adding sales capacity, that this does not constrain you in any way going forward. So my question here is more that if enterprise starts to show the sort of the momentum you expect or even accelerates faster, you would not be constrained in any way by these investments to add more in sales capacity to drive enterprise. And then the last question is, I know that you're also sort of doing more and more of these bolt-on acquisitions, which are kind of mild margin dilutive or which can be slightly margin dilutive. So does this sort of updated guidance for both 21 and your messaging on 22 and 23 build in some of that dilution risk such that, you know, that there's no kind of further incremental downside risk to the margin? Thank you.
Yeah, so let me begin and Oliver chime in. So first of all, maybe on the enterprise investments, absolutely. I mean, we have, as Oliver explained and I mentioned as well, we have not cut back on other investment areas. I mean, the business, we set ourselves a target to grow to 1 billion, right? And that in itself gives us significant headroom to grow. And we are a fast-growing business at north of 90% GP margins. So therefore, by just growing our OPEX in line with billings growth, that already gives us significant headroom to invest into sales, into R&D, right? But obviously, this step up in marketing spend, we could have actually cut back on other investment areas to flatten the impact, yeah? But that's not what we wanted to do. And clearly, we also had discussions in our senior leadership team and the management board and supervisory board, and clearly, that's not what we want to do, right? Because we actually invest into that marketing to continue to broaden our customer base so that we can serve it throughout all go-to-market channels, enterprise, inside sales, and so forth, right? And obviously, we are a highly innovative company and continue to invest into future R&D and product innovation. So by all means, it will not result in a cutback of any investment areas, not at all. Margin-wise, absolutely, I think that's all been baked in. That's the explanation why we take this margin dip here, because we don't want to cut back on those other investment areas, and we haven't done so in the past. So from our perspective, that's all baked into the current margin outlook for the next couple of years. And then in terms of quantitative...
Bolt-on acquisition. I think, Stefan, you should comment on bolt-on acquisitions or how that is baked in.
Bolt-on acquisitions like the ones which we've done so far, I mean, they've been all fairly small in terms of billings contribution compared to TeamView overall. Typically, those companies we've acquired at a break-even level, give or take, most of them. And despite those acquisitions, we've actually been able to keep our margins at the current level. And I think that's clearly also our plan going forward. So if we buy something, technologies or smaller teams, the clear goal is to scale those technologies through the TeamViewer platform, basically. And clearly here, also the Man United partnership will help us to scale any potential adjacent acquisitions even better, right? I think we've done that successfully in the past with Ubimax, where you haven't seen any dilutive impact despite the fact that they have been break even more or less, but we've been able to scale that business, and I think that that's a good proof point for future smaller tuck-in acquisitions.
Yeah, and on the quantification, I think it's a great question, more because that shows a little bit, I think, the sometimes and often also the dilemma which kind of company in a certain stage of the life cycle are, or maybe also European versus US companies are, quite frankly. Of course, there's a lot of marketing activities that you can do, which in today's digital world are really, really easily trackable. So any search, if you do any keyword advertising, any banner ad, any display, you can track it down and you can measure the efficiency. I think what these bring you is you can carefully deploy money, you can measure ROI, and you can generate impact, lead gen, and billings. What it doesn't do for you is creating a brand umbrella and brand equity in a very systematic, big way, so that you can distance your competition significantly by doing that. I think that's the tricky part. And an organization like TeamViewer, in all honesty, is very much used to the former type of marketing, because you can always hold the rail and it's always safe, because if you have spent something and it doesn't work, it's not too much, and you can also even track it quite nicely. I think the moment when you're growing then a company, at some point you have to take a decision whether you continue to do that, which is efficient, very efficient, but it limits your upside. It really does limit your upside. And I think what you have to do as management at some point is to say, okay, can I live with the limitation of the upside? And also, will there be dangers of people who have bigger brands and move into your space maybe at some point? So is it wise to not build brand equity against these other players? And I think although it's hard to measure the ROI, I think there's of course models that look at the funnel, brand awareness considerations, so you can really walk through this and see what it does to your brand. And of course we will do that, but it still takes time. It's more periods, more quarters until things happen, and you have to be steady on it. And that's the difficulty with it. But if you turn it around and say, okay, what are successful high growth tech players doing? Most of them have at some point in their life decided to position the brand much bigger. And of course, the easy one is to say, I grow first and then I can fit something into the margin and spend more on brand. The more courageous decision is to say, well, okay, we now want to upfront invest. And we tell our investors we do so. I think some of our US peers are incredibly good at that, incredibly aggressive, and success shows that they've done the right thing. We are at this point now. We try to balance it out, but we go big, because what we do believe, if you spend on brand, as I said at the beginning, if you spend, you better spend it with the absolute leading assets, because even if it's a bit more expensive, it is a much, much higher certainty, a much lower execution risk, because Manchester United know what they do in branding, and other people we might want to work with know what they do in branding and how they play in different channels. And that's what we're trying to leverage here.
And maybe one more comment on that. Do we believe and are pretty confident that we actually get additional billings out of that? Absolutely. And if you consider our low churn and actually then take the lifetime value of any additional billings we get, I think it's very worthwhile, the investment. So from my perspective, the downside is very limited, frankly, because there will be significant incremental billings at one point in time. And if you compare that then with the lifetime value of those customers, it's very attractive and limits the downside very significantly. But we've created significant upside in the long run.
Okay. And can I just clarify that? So essentially from here, any sort of revenue upside you get, whether it's in the sort of core business or in the, from some of these partnerships, that should all be kind of accretive to the margin from here, unless there's another big kind of investment, in the absence of a big investment plan.
Exactly. That's exactly right. We look at it the following way. We talk about bolt-on acquisitions, which are covered in what we have, right? They are margin diluted, as you exactly say, but from a size perspective, they don't move the needle really, right? So, and we've just done two this year, so there's no pressure to do the next one. We have a nice portfolio now. So if there's opportunity, we will go for opportunity, but it's this is not kind of priority number one for us. So this is one thing. Then we have room for more partnerships within what we've given us now in this communication, and we have good ideas what to do with it. And I think they are very compelling ideas. And if I could talk about it, you would probably all agree it's very compelling, or hopefully agree, but it's too early to talk about it. But we try to move forward on this one. So this is what we have catered for now. If these things work out as planned or better than planned, call it in the short term, so 2023, and there's an extra 50 million in billings that would be created because it just worked better, that would be very accretive, yes, because we have now really given you what we need to build brand, to grow sales, to build the product, to have our local offices, and we have not given you quantified upside for 2023, so naturally, if there is something good happening, then it will fall through to margin. And of course, you can make all kinds of cases why it should happen over a two-year period of time, but please allow us also to get these things all in place, full picture, do the modeling, show to you the scenario, and then go through.
Great. Thank you, Oliver. Thanks, Stefan.
The next question comes from line of Gustav Froberg with Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for taking mine as well. I have a couple, but I'll try to keep it short. Firstly, just on contract value and spending, this is more of a clarification question. Could you just quantify for me again how much you plan on spending for this deal in 2021 and then also in 2022-23? Was it 35 million this year and then 60 million next year?
Yes, correct. That's roughly the math, but that includes, as you mentioned, both of those deals, right? The one which we just signed.
Yeah, not that
deal. Today.
Correct. Not just
correct.
For this
and,
year,
but
right?
The other
so,
one.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I got it. So 60 million accounts for two deals, one of which you have not yet announced.
Correct.
And then about other investments as well. We talked a lot about P&L investments, and you mentioned just now that you have no rush to do more M&A, but is this fair to assume then that there will be no more M&A from TeamViewer this year and maybe also not next year, or would you still count on the opportunity if you're given the chance?
We would, if there's a good opportunity, in the same logic as we've done UbiMax, Upskill, Xaleon, if there's an opportunity like this, which really fits and makes a lot of sense and comes across it, we look at it, we diligent it. If it makes sense, we have a proper board discussion, and we would do it if it's a great opportunity. But we don't need to, and we would do it based on amendment of the portfolio. And I think now, quite frankly, if you look at it from an operations perspective, now we have this partnership which starts in summer. Assume we do something for enterprise then as well at some point. There is also a lot of things we should operationally do to leverage this first, and maybe it's wise to do that first and then kind of increase the basket of offerings again if needed or if there's an attractive opportunity. So that would be the order I would think about it at the moment.
Okay, super. That's very helpful. And just a final question on ROI. I know we've talked a lot about it on the call, but you said that you've not yet done the calculation on the ROI, it sounds. Is it so that you feel so confident that there will be a positive and attractive ROI on this, that it'll be fine? Is there any kind of, what happens if you run the numbers and it turns out it's not attractive for you? And is there any backout clause on this, or are you just going for 5 years anyway?
Okay, so and then misunderstanding. So A, it is 5 years. So I think the question on ROI is, it's more linked to if I take, for example, 1 month of spend and compare that to digital marketing, then the ROI, as Mo said, is harder to quantify, right? So what is the immediate benefit of a month of spend in such a deal? You see it on brand awareness, but even on brand awareness within 4 weeks, there's not that much happening. Very different from ROI calculation on digital performance marketing, which is easy, right? So that was the comment on this one. Of course, we have run scenarios and quantified how we see the long-term growth happening. And you all have your assumptions in the model of growth longer term and how that could look like after 2023. And of course, we have an understanding of what that could be. But if you think about the delta in valuation for this business, whether we grow 20% after 2023 or 25 or 27 or 30. From a valuation perspective, profitability is anyway great. That growth profile and then the related multiple to a business which is growing to, say, maybe 28% versus something which is growing 20%, that's huge. The change is huge. And there's also the other element when we already our current plan is significantly more attractive and more ambitious than our IPO case, for example. So if there would be competition from left, right, and there's a little bit of downside, and we can protect a downside here, I think that's also quite good. So I think the range of outcomes varies so much with so big numbers that relative to that, the spend per year on a partnership like this is actually very, very moderate. So that's why the big picture R&I on this one is very strong. Measuring it every single month is more difficult, so you have to stick to it and let it build up. And work in partnership to adjust and optimize if you feel something is not working perfectly. But the good thing is a company in that sense, a business like Manchester United is super experienced in these things. And that gives me lots of comfort that we will do the right thing and get the benefit that others get. I mean, if you look at the statistics on share price performance of companies that have been in these games and how important brand is and how that all trickles through and the recall rate if you are on a very high quality asset. There is these anecdotes, there's this lead indicator KPI, which then ultimately lead to a very good result. But in the middle of it, it's a bit more difficult than performance marketing.
Yeah, fine. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you so much for your answers.
Your next question comes from the line of Andreas Wolf with Warburg Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Two, if I may. The first one is, would you be able to reach 30% billings growth over the next couple of years without this campaign? So I guess the answer is yes. And the second question is on general brand awareness marketing spending. So if we look 5 years ahead, would you reconsider similar spendings, or let me ask the question differently, what is the billings growth rate that you would like to see then in order to go for an extension of the deal or of a similar deal? Thank you.
Yeah, clearly. The first question is answered with yes, absolutely. We feel very confident with our target here. And the question is, how will we assess this deal 4 or 5 years from today? So clearly, if we achieve a 28% growth or a high 20 growth in year 4 and 5, I think everybody is very pleased. How much can you then contribute of that growth to this marketing initiatives? I think that's going to be tough, yeah. But I think then at the end of the day, everybody would be happy that we actually placed the company for stronger growth for longer. Yeah, so I'd be very happy with the outcome. And maybe it's just tough to say right now.
Yeah, but I think the other way to look at it, and maybe that was where the question was going also, do we need to step up even more later, or what is the percentage of marketing spend that we should have 4 or 5 years down the road? Should we prolong the deal or not prolong the deal at that point in time? The way I look at it is now it's a P&L hit, very clearly. We exchanging short-term profitability for a longer-term prospect, absolutely clear, and people can take different views of it. I personally believe as a shareholder that's exactly the right thing to do, but it is a painful exercise, no question about that. If you go 4 or 5 years, if you look 4 or 5 years ahead, and you look at the billings number that we would have, if we have get to like 25% plus growth, 27 or whatever it is, the number is, and you take the billings then maybe in 2024, 2025, and we would sit there. And I would tell you, we have a partnership, we have a brand spend of X amount, well above 100 million, and just because percentage-wise of our billings, that's what the math shows. And our marketing mix is, I have people, I have digital performance marketing, I do a bit of digital placement in some important media, and I have a superstar partnership with Manchester United that drives awareness and consideration globally in all my strategic markets, maybe towards SMB and towards the consumer segment. And I have another one which does the same in the enterprise OT operational segment. And that's all part of the budget, and that's the marketing mix we have. I think in 5 years' time, we would all sit here and say that's a super normal marketing mix for a company of that size, billings of whatever 1 point something billion it is then. This is the marketing spend, and this is what they do with it. And we all would feel, yeah, absolutely. I think the difficulty at the moment is you have to upfront that, and that's what we do now. It will be absorbed. It will be part of our normal marketing budget some years down the road, but it is not now, and that's why we had to carve it out and say we want to spend more now to start building that motion.
Great. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Gianmarco from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my questions. I think most of the people have asked mine. I might have just one last one. Actually, two maybe. The first one is last year, if you're looking at what Chevrolet kind of spent for Manchester United sponsorships, it was roughly about 64 million, and that was approximately on a yearly run rate. So you're saying that, you know, this approximate math of 35 million for half of the year, potentially 60 million for next year, that also includes an extra partnership. Was this a good deal then? Because if they kind of, I think you mentioned they approached you guys, and did you manage to maybe negotiate a good deal on that sense? Because it's looking like it's lower than what Chevrolet had spent in that year, but you also are baking in another deal, another marketing expense for the enterprise segment. That's the first question. And the second one is, I guess you've kind of roughly answered this, but I just want to, you know, double clarify this. You don't have a specific plan to track how this money is kind of spent, right? I'm guessing it is quite hard to quantify it, but do you sort of have some like rough KPIs that you're using to track how is this money well spent on marketing, or is this something that, you know, is more of a, as you've explained, brand awareness exercise for the long term? That'll be very helpful, can I just say. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Good questions. Maybe let me start with the last one. I think how you do these things is you track the brand indicators first. So it's all, I mean, you really work yourself through the funnel. So you really understand first the brand awareness in the different markets. So don't forget, if you track brand awareness, you can do it very rough cut. What is the brand awareness globally? But what we really need to do, and that's what we will do, of course, is to look at it on a country-by-country perspective, and we have done it. We have the studies available from last year and from IPO. So brand awareness by country and by segment, of course, and then you start working on it. And as we know, for example, Japan is an interesting growth market, so we want to do something in Japan. China is important. We want to do something in China. So really market by market. If you have the awareness, the next step is, okay, do I have the right brand values? Are people putting me in the right box? And of course, very different from a free user consumer, they should put us in the box of great product, great brand, lively community, want to be part of it, and super secure. And if you enterprise, very different. So high security, functionality, OT, and the likes and the likes. So we need to position these brand values as well. And that you can also measure. So you can also then see how that brand progresses. And then, of course, then you start to measure the billings, which we will also do. So what you can measure well is how you work yourself through the funnel and how it converts in billings and then also in loyalty. So churn, loyalty, price up potential, that we will manage, be able to manage well. What is, and then we have the assets that we get from Manchester United. And that's harder because we will have, of course, the jerseys. The jersey will be on television, and there is Nielsen media values to all of this. How often is the jersey broadcasted? How often is it in print, on digital, social media, all kinds of great numbers, which you can also put together and see what scores how much. What you can't do is the good combination of those, saying, okay, it is the jersey that drives actually the consideration from business customers in Japan. That's impossible. So that's where it gets harder to measure that. I think that was most point of this one. But the good thing is we have all the assets. We have the shirt, We have the DigiBoard while the game is running and transmissions. We have player testimonials. We have the web shop. We have social media. We have all that channel. We get all the print. The nice thing with European soccer, it's not a complex rights situation other than NBA, NFL, NHL in the US, for example, where players separate from league separate from team, very hard. It's very contained in European football. So if we think that one of the players should position a new consumer proposition on his social media channel, that's possible. It's all possible. So we can drive really across very, very different media assets, can drive the messaging, and that will be a lot of opportunity. And thereby, we can target different markets. Based on the broadcasting, we see where the broadcast happens, where there's print coverage. It's an enormous opportunity. I think the issue, last comment on this one, with those deals is, they on first sight, they look expensive because there's also football team that you can sponsor for 8 million a year, and that also sounds quite well known, and you feel maybe that's good. But then you have to really look at the assets, the number of broadcast minutes, the number of sold shirts, the players, where they travel, digital, social media. It's enormous contact, and we will use those. Which leads me to your first question. Thank you for that one, actually, on the deal. What you say is right. There was communication on how much they paid Chevrolet. And if you do the math of what we communicated, and if I tell you that the other partnership we're discussing is would be also significant, I think we actually did get a pretty good deal at that point in time. There's 5,000 reasons for that. One is, of course, COVID, timing. There has to be an opportunity. I think we are an attractive brand. They approached us because we are an attractive company. We bring something which is good for them as well, technology. You can also put a consumer whatever product on the shirt and it has no value for you because it's just a piece of it's milk or whatever. It doesn't matter really. We bring something. And there's very more and more examples where technology company partner with sports company because there's something in there. There is the whole esports. There is the data analytics. It's a little bit what happens in motor racing for years already. It's coming into other places. We also sponsor in a very small amount handball, as you know, locally. Same thing, player movement, ball movement, big data analytics. It's coming more and more, and therefore we bring something. We also bring the brand appeal. We are nicely growing. And I think, therefore, we got in the relevant bet. They approached us, and then it's all a matter of can you transact and can you get the support within a short time window at the right price. All of that happened, and therefore, that was also one of the reasons that I actually believe that that deal is very good for us.
Actually exploit the individual social media channel of every single Manchester United football player if you wanted to sponsor a specific product. Is that my correct understanding?
Yeah, so you have this very good influence of the team on what players are doing, and it's a broad business-based partnership. So if we feel or if there's conviction that a certain player could position something, that is entirely possible, and you can of course not do it everywhere, all player, all the products, but we will have projects and situations where we say here's something which we want to drive forward. And can this player do that? And then we discuss it, and that's all covered in the rights, which doesn't mean we own the player. The other way around is the truth. In the US, you would not own the player. So you would start an individual negotiation with the player to acquire player rights and pay for it to get that done. That's not the case in European football.
Nice. So the actual club has a certain amount of influence over the player on what they, you know, can advertise.
Correct.
On your behalf.
There's a commitment from the club to engage with us, with the player, so that we, around product launch and so forth, can actually use their social media instruments to actually position our product launches, for example.
Yeah.
So that's
very different than in America.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much. That was very helpful. Cheers.
As a reminder, please press star followed by one to ask a question. The next question comes from line of Victor Cheng with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi, Oliver and Stephan. Thanks for taking my question. Just two from my side. Are you able to comment on any changes in the competitive environment you see maybe in the lower end market? It seems like, you know, there is some competition that is probably growing with a lower marketing spend. And given you historically can attract and retain users mostly based on your free and best-in-class solution, how much do you think, you know, the increased brand awareness will help you compete? And then secondly, on the United deal, is there a variable component in there? And if so, how big is it? You know, just thinking, is it tied to any of their performance on the pitch, which obviously will in turn, you know, impact their social presence? Thank you.
Maybe on the latter one first. Predominantly, it's a fixed fee. I think it's, as Oliver said, it's for a variety of reasons. I think it's a very good deal for us, but it's predominantly fixed with a very small variable portion, but that depends more on, like, which assets one we book, do we want to use in addition and so forth. Yeah, so it's predominantly a fixed fee. And then on the competitive environment, I would say nothing has really changed there, frankly. I mean, clearly, there is always a healthy competition on the low end, depending on the markets, different players in certain geographies. But I do think what we're actually doing here, it might actually help us to distance that from, to distance ourselves from those low end players quite substantially. So it's one of the additional benefits, but the competitive environment hasn't really changed.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you.
And I
the next question.
Maybe I can also one comment because it's kind of hitting the inbox during the whole day. I think if you look at the industry participants that know us and also the world of board and partners, the feedback that we're getting is enormously positive for the deal. So I know we have to explain it to you in a better way and it's not perfect, but I feel very, very confident that we absolutely did the right thing. I just got an email from somebody who is potentially another interesting new partner. And just the notion of us being now together with Manchester United as the kind of the outlook of being part of a three-way whatever partnership combination is enormously attractive for people.
The next question comes from line of Sherry Malik with RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for squeezing me in. I just have two hopefully quick questions. The first one is, I'm curious to know what has changed in your thinking or what are you seeing now that perhaps was not so clear 1 year or 6 months ago, which gives you the confidence in investing incrementally now or believing that's the right course compared to how you were previously managing the trade-off between top-line growth and margin? And then the second question was just a quick clarification on a previous question that was asked. So should we understand that any upside to billings from these deals will drop through to the margin? Or do you think that there could be more opportunities to reinvest that operating leverage? So should we be thinking that the margin will be around 50% or is that more like the floor? Thanks.
Maybe on the first one, what changed our thinking? I think number one is we have executed on many growth initiatives and we are very successful in this. And we always look for more, quite frankly. And we got investor feedback from many investors. They could you sacrifice margins to grow faster and do more and develop the company even further? I think that was a consistent input, I would say, at least from my perspective, since the IPO, which we, not by everybody, but we heard it by many. Also, peer group comparison. This is like, okay, there is appetite for longer term growth and the willingness to back management teams that take entrepreneurial decisions to drive that and invest there. I think that's one thing. So that's probably gradually developing. We have a broader solution portfolio now. We have more to offer, much more to offer, and we will have more. So we, as I said before, there's product launch around the corner. So we will have a broader portfolio. And if you have a broad portfolio and a nice brand, it makes a lot of sense to put this together and just communicate much more and position it much more. I think that's another one. We had already increased the budget and we were just working through the allocation and the first plans on where to spend money on publishers, like I said before. But I think the COVID times has dislocated some of the sports events. And the first small thing which we did, very small, don't take it the wrong way, but was the local handball club that actually needed a helping hand to keep going. And we did that. So we learned quite a bit around that. And then I think with the continuation of the COVID crisis, there were few opportunities available, which came to us because people got to know us in what we do and how we drive the business. I think an attractive story, as I said. And if you put this together, like the evolution of our thinking, the opportunity to do something, and the product portfolio we have, that was the moment where, at least for myself as shareholder, I felt, okay, now we have to do it. We really have to do it. We should not continue to just run the business as we had to. There is the next horizon here that we should go for.
Yeah, I can only second that. I think the speed at which we innovated and broadened our solutions portfolio was certainly quite significant over the last six to nine months, right? Therefore, if we add all of this together, that's how we arrived at the situation. Then in terms of margin bottom and so forth, and would incremental billings on top of the communicated guidance fall through to the bottom line? Absolutely. I think there is then clearly the possibility that additional billings on top of what we communicated would clearly improve our margins again. And then the question is, what do we do that? Do we want to optimize our margins again? Are there other investment opportunities? I think that's a bit early to say. But frankly, the margin profile which we have now announced is clearly should be seen as the bottom.
Very clear. Thank you very much.
As a reminder, please press star followed by one to ask a question. The next question comes from the line of Hannes Leitner with UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Short questions. One side, given your marketing spend, excluding this large deal, maybe you can talk a little bit about the buckets. Are you holding, for example, a user convention where you talk through about the use cases and develop, coexist, get the users together and developers? And then the second question is, Manchester United, it's football, it's consumer driven, it is European. Yes, they have global reach in certain pockets, but one of your growth markets was the US. Why did you think this is a better opportunity than doing some brand awareness in the US and try there to build up the brand compared to competition and explain the use cases, etc.?
Yeah, quite an interesting question on the latter one. I think we have compared a larger number of assets, and there were opportunities, interesting, very interesting opportunities, or big names, interesting names in the US. If you compare the right situation, if you compare what you really can do, and then also the target audiences and the reach that somebody like Manchester United out of Europe, with a small portion of their fan base in the Americas, can achieve, even compared to the US-based player, it's quite significant because it's the media rights which you can really use very significantly. And there is a significant amount of fans from kind of people with a European heritage that are linked to the Premier League a lot. So we have three people in our senior leadership team that are based in the United States, and their excitement for a US-based asset was by no means higher than for Manchester United. On the contrary, it's this, we can do this, that all sounds interesting and reasonable, or we could do Manchester United. Wow, okay, that's a game changer. APAC is enormously well covered. It's a big, big market, and Europe we don't have to talk about. So it is actually, if you really do the comparison of the media assets, it's enormously strong from a rights perspective. Next to it is Formula One, which has the same local kind of global approach, lots of media coverage, and regular viewership. So there is just the difference in these assets is very significant, and that's also reflected, quite frankly, in pricing of those assets. While in the first place, honestly, you think, well, maybe we should spend less because there is this asset here. If you really do the math, it doesn't make any sense.
Your first question about terms of marketing mix, so far marketing spend, so far a big part of that was actually going into search engine optimization and keyword search. So I'd say more driving the velocity business, frankly. That was a big part of our marketing spend overall. Then clearly augmented over the last 1 or 2 years in terms of longer-term enterprise marketing, solution marketing, also more towards bias towards resellers and so forth. And yes, we have planned global end-user events already in 2020, but then obviously the pandemic changed the plans quite significantly, but we will continue and actually will launch such an event if the environment allows for that in 2021. So we clearly continue with our focus on the enterprise marketing going forward as well.
Okay. Good luck with this.
Next question comes from line of Giuseppe Galoppo with Fidelity. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. Obviously, some of the questions that I had have been already asked, but I have one or two left, if I may. You said that you were contacted by sort of Manchester United. Did they provide sort of any hard examples of sort of what Chevrolet and AIG, for example, before them achieved from their partnership with Manchester United? Did they share any hard data that sort of gave you sort of even more confidence of going for this, or they did not share anything sort of from previous sort of partnership agreements?
They shared overall a huge amount of data with us across customer cohorts, user bases, global reach, the various assets and so forth. And clearly then we've also done our own research to understand the validity of those data around the sponsors you've mentioned. Yeah, and based on putting all of that together, we felt very excited about the potential benefit we get from this partnership.
And they also shared case study data from the branding impact and revenue impact. And I think also we'll also get some additional kind of stock market performance, which is the resulting factor of that. Actually, what I think one of the things that comes through, if you talk to the top-notch sports franchises, be it Manchester or, as I said, we talk to quite a few others, they are very serious about what they do. So they understand the partnership model. They understand that the value is in renewals, that they need to make partners happy and deliver the value, really, the economic value to their partners. So whenever you talk to one of these players, they come with good references cases of the past, what others have achieved. Also, the U.S. assets we talk to, very clear. It is really available. Of course, as I said, you cannot kind of link it down to the very single measure, but on a rough cut, it is available as case studies for all these franchises that we looked at. So various franchises in various regions. For the strong players. And what it shows you is that you can argue whether franchise one, franchise A, what you pick, what you like more, what is the better fit. But what stands out, I think, for all of them is the media value you get because of the concentration of media on the winner. So there's so much of a winner takes it all in the media that the winner in a certain category is capturing a lot of media volume. If you quantify that, and even if you discount it significantly, it's still a very, very good case in terms of the pay. And they have shown then how that translates into long-term business success. But what is clear, and that's also the reason why we're a bit cautious, is these partnerships are 5 years, and at the end, or halfway in, or years 3, 4, everybody would say the best, one of the best things I did really, really, really brought us up. We know lots of case studies on soccer. We know the actually even people that buy the rights for typical for stadiums. I mean, I think there's a quote out there of one company that did that very expensive deal in Germany. The feedback is one of the best deals ever because it has a significant halo effect that comes through, and you see that in data that they provide.
Fantastic. I mean, and the sort of other question that I wanted to ask, I mean, a couple of other people have also remarked a little bit on this. You mentioned a couple of times that you wanted to defend the lower end a little bit better. Are there sort of increased worries that sort of you might be sort of be experiencing higher churn to in that sort of what was already a competitive part of the market, or is it just sort of an improvement from current levels?
Good question. So we operate in many markets, right? And I think it's fair to say that there's low-end competition in various regions and in various countries even. And in some markets, that's a total non-issue. And in some more price-sensitive markets, it is something which we deal with on a daily basis, where we actually need to see whether our remote access pricing is aggressive enough to compete. And I'm only talking really, that is the remote access piece on the low end. Everything which has to do with mid-market, enterprise, OT use cases, that's absolutely non-issue. But in the lower end, different countries have different situations. I think one of the attractions, and now we can go after each country and try to fight back with SEA spend, Google spend, and do something here and something there. And then it starts to become pretty fragmented in what you do. And also it comes with some opportunity cost where you want to spend money on other things, maybe if you are in a country that you want to grow. Do you defend the low end or do you go for enterprise? And I think we want to go for mid-market and enterprise and SMB and don't want to spend money to defend the low end really in certain markets. I think the beauty of a partnership like this is with all the forward-looking topics, all the digitalization, all the SMB focus and everything we do in the middle segment, the umbrella effect on the brand globally in every market will be very significant, and I think it will help us a lot without us doing much on top of it. Of course, we pay for it, but without us doing much on top of it, really. If you have a competitor X, say, in Korea, and now one of the most favorite European soccer clubs with fan base in Korea is our sponsor and is presenting us there, that puts us on a different site level, and that will help.
Okay, very, very clear. And very, very last one for me is, I mean, I know you said many times it's difficult to quantify, right? So if we invert the question, what would be a disappointing result out of this? If you had to describe a disappointing result out of this partnership, what would that be?
Good question. I think the way we think about it, if we were to make our 30% growth over the next 3 years and get to the 1 billion in 2023, and from there on, so all things being equal, competitive landscape, ceteris paribus, so without shocks left, right, center, but I take a view of the business now, then I say after that, we continue to grow 20%, then I would say, well, maybe that would have been possible without it. And in that sense, then we'll say, okay, fine. Then maybe we protected the downside, but we haven't created the upside that we wanted to. That's how I would look at it.
Thank you. Very clear.
Next question comes from the line of Tim Kivio with Fukuku Life. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks for the long presentation and the explanations. Just a question, I work on the buy side. Obviously, the stock market didn't particularly enjoy the announcement today. What reassurance can you give us that the lower end of your sales guidance won't be withdrawn at Q3 this year?
Well, because we are tracking so far in line with our guidance, which we provided. We have very good visibility into the enterprise segment, good visibility into our high velocity business, and therefore we feel confident with the guidance we gave out there.
Yes, and I think if anything, we have now we have increased our stamina, let's put it this way. So, and I'm not saying that will create any upside this year, as we said multiple times now, but I think it's fundamentally being on television every weekend and somewhere else maybe on these assets, I would be surprised if that doesn't help us as well. So I think if anything, I would be now super confident.
Sure. Okay. Just because, you know, clearly so some investors didn't like the announcement today. I think we should probably acknowledge that. The targets you've set previous to today, you know, they're ambitious, obviously, to double revenue over 3 years with 30% each year. Were you stretching yourselves to the point where you now need to go and buy some revenue or buy a bit more sales at the expense of margin? Is that too harsh an assessment of this deal?
Yeah, that's too harsh an assessment, clearly, because we put it out because we knew how the business is going, and we already see again this year how it's going. So we know our business quite well now, and we put the target out. We always give ourselves ambitious goals, clearly. Yeah. So we are not we are not sandbagging when we go out there. It's ambitious and achievable, and I think that's what you've seen in the past. We were absolutely and still are absolutely convinced that we could go there. Look, in the discussion with the board, we fundamentally believe that we're doing the right thing here. I, as an investor, believe I'm doing the right thing. And as an entrepreneur, was I aware that this will not be easy? I was, but I have been going into this together with Stefan and management team and supervisor board eyes open. Is the reaction very harsh today? Yes, there's probably certain factors and things we could have done better, fully acknowledge. And I also acknowledge that some investors really don't like it because they have expected a different profile, and they like the profile a lot of 56-57% margin with now 30% growth for the next 2 years or so. But there's maybe other investors who like the profile of a bit more spend on marketing for long-term upside. So that's something we need to go through. It was absolutely clear that we need to explain it and that it will be questions and tough questions. But I'm 100% convinced, and that's why we decided to go that way. And I'm very happy to take any question and spend next week another 1.5 hours and explain where we're heading and clarify the plan, because I fundamentally believe it's the right thing for the company, and it has significant upside if we execute on this. And therefore we went for it.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more, frankly. I mean, clearly, are there things which we could have done better around this announcement? Absolutely. Timing not ideal and so forth, but obviously you need to make those deals when you have a chance to close them, as Oliver explained at the beginning. But I'm absolutely convinced this is the right thing to do for this company long term. Absolutely. And clearly Oliver and I, plus significant amount of the board members, are very substantial shareholders here. So we share the same pain.
Yeah, I guess just as a sign off, you know, the proof of the pudding will be, you know, in the results. We look forward to your next set of results eagerly, and the half year and obviously then the full year after. But you know, making this work clearly is of high importance now, having committed so much capital towards it. But thank you for taking my question.
Question is from the line of Drew Buckley with William Blair Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call, or my question here. Just one really quick one. You know, I wonder if you, along the lines of the gentleman from Fidelity, you know, did you guys talk to anyone outside of the company, or did you use any sort of industry expert to evaluate this partnership and say whether or not it was going to be fruitful? Of course, there's marketing expertise outside of the company, and I'm sure within the company. Did you use any of that, or is anyone internally that you thought could really help evaluate this type of deal? You know, myself, I don't really know how to begin to evaluate it. We can do it on the financial metrics, which you heard a lot of the questions about, but more on the side of whether or not it would be good. I think that's a marketing expert's probably call, and I'm wondering how you guys thought through that, or if you had any outside counsel help you with that.
Well, we had outside counsel on communication in general, and also on branding. We had a significant amount of comparable data from different media assets. So we looked into various data rooms within, of course, under confidentiality. So we looked into various data rooms to compare and contrast of what is available where and how that works. We had, of course, expert lawyers on these type of sports deals to understand what is possible, what's not possible. So Plus, of course, the internal expertise that we have, our CMO, myself, and others that have done parts like this or shut down deals like this. I was one who shut down deals like this in the past, because you can easily spend sponsoring money on mediocre deals which don't get you anywhere. So I think that's what we did. We also, of course, did brand analytics studies before at IPO, and also recently with McKinsey to understand last year for the board strategy offsite, to understand where we are in the brand, what the brand stands for, and where there's the upside potential. So a good collection of external advice, I would say, and a lot of comparison between different options and cases.
Okay, great. Thanks. And I'll just throw one thing in there, which is, you know, the more detail you guys can share on that, I know this kind of, as you said earlier, it came up quick and you weren't able to get everything, all the ducks in the row as it relates to the presentation. But as we go into the future, any more detail you can share on that and the results and the presentations you guys do would always be helpful to us. So
yes. Yeah, I mean, appreciate it. And I think one other point, which you see, if you work with these very professional mega players, they are as professional, and they track, carry, and have the data so that they're living, and therefore the more closer we get to this now, of course, all NDA is gone and everything under agreement now, the more we will have available and can share and help you navigate through this.
Awesome. That sounds great. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
And there are no further questions registered at this time. I would like to hand back to Oliver Steil, CEO, for closing comments.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for your time. Obviously, we spent quite some time now, which I think is very good. Thanks for coming. Thanks for asking the questions. As I said before, I understand it's something which needs thinking, navigation, and we need to do more of that. And not, as I said, not all is possible in the short moment of time. The feedback we get from the market, the business market, the commercial market, customers is very good. So we will continue to work with you and communicate our long-term ambitions, quantify it, and show you what we do there to win your trust on this. We strongly believe we're doing the right thing for the business, as I said before, and I hope we can convince you to come along. So thanks for coming, and thank you for the questions.
Indeed. Thank you.